on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the
street. I've heard this before.
Can't you hear a pitter-patter?
Happy step is your feet.
Yeah. And that happy tune is your step.
Happy tune. Ma.
Oh, come on.
Gotcha.
Gotcha.
Again.
Oh,
sure, somebody would jump in before me, but I win.
Well,
hold on, it's not over. It's not over, and I'll tell you why as soon as we do our little Kalita's interrupt this here. Hold on.
If there is any takeaway from today, it's this. Anyone can be a racist. Anyone.
Crossed over.
Well, thank you for that. Here's why it's not over. Let Willie finish singing. I'll tell you why it's not over.
All right.
Hum. No, wait. Now wait, and I'll tell you why it's not over.
Okay.
Let the little piano part finish. First, let me welcome everybody. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the January 8th edition of the Large Morning Show in the Afternoon, the only show of its kind on the radio, at least I know in this town, probably in the United States, because all the other shows are just... they're way too structured, or they're too narrow in their scope of, you know, what they talk about or what they cover. We're pretty wide open here. What we don't like to do is argue and fight. I'm not a sports expert.
Well, that's a bunch of crap. We do argue and fight.
I'll shut your mouth. I'm talking about with the listeners about politics, and we don't do that. We're not going to get into it. Oh, by the way. Now I won. Now I won, and I'll tell you why.
How is this
the
fair?
One, hold on. I'm the one who, I believe, yesterday set the rule that it doesn't count unless you wait until the opening thing is the theme is over.
Okay.
I said that, and you all agree. Now the theme is over. I just said, I won.
So he had a premature
I did. And now I've won. So I feel pretty good about starting off the show.
He's a prima. Donna.
Anything else? Any other names you want to call it? You're all just mad because I won. You're trying to, you know, make light of the fact that you're miserable and you feel defeated. You can come back and win tomorrow.
I feel slightly
the theme is over.
I feel slightly deflated now by today's show.
You have to wait till the last piano note of Sunny Side of the Street, because if you say before that, it doesn't count.
Dan, what sound do you make? Everybody. Dan, what sound do you make when you're slightly deflated?
Once again, it was Dan and not me. I'm too mature to do that. Again, welcome. It is the 8th day of January. The weather now starts to kind of fall apart and it becomes more like January weather. Dan Buffa comes in today, and like Josh Bauman yesterday, this is his first appearance in 3 weeks, so I think he has a lot of stuff to cover. One of the things that I'm hoping he will talk about is what I have my DVR set up for tonight on the History Channel, and that is Project Blue Book. It looks very interesting to me. We'll talk more about that later.
Is it about used cars?
No.
Kelly Blue Book, get it?
Dan, I get it, okay? I get it. Only people who know anything about the car business would get it. So once again, you've made a reference that is so narrow in its window of... so few people can identify with it. Yes, Dan, you've done it again. You've talked to three people. Vague, obscure references. Most people can't understand. Why don't you just go ahead and say NADA and Edmunds and go through all of the people who evaluate cars and their value. Now, we'll talk more about this Project Blue Book later, but first order of business is... does anybody have anything to say? And I know that Tim Woodburn has something to say. And I'm going to let him go first because of that. And before he says what I'm pretty sure he's about to say, I'm going to say anything. I'll let you go first. Tim, it's all yours.
Thank you, Frank. I had three very pleasant conversations today, one with Randy Markell, the station owner, and one with John Hadley, the general manager of the station, and one with Frank as well. And... I've been thinking about this for a while. I shared this with Limey at the Christmas party that I was contemplating doing this, and I have resigned from the station, and Thursday will be my last day here. And thank you. But
this would also be allowing me a good opportunity for the ooh ah. kind of a shocker.
Okay, hang on a second. A shocker.
That's appropriate too.
No, it's a happy thing for me. There are, I turned 50 years old this year, and I've been in the radio business off and on for about 25 years, and there are some things I still want to accomplish in life before it's my time, and I can't do all of those and also commit basically 5 hours a day to the 3 hours I'm here at the show, the hour I spend prepping, and the hour I come down here and travel to the station and back. So
prepping, what's that?
That's what I do when I write the newscast. You think I just make that up as I go? Well, there are some days I do, but the prep that I put into putting the show together, or my part of the show together, and then the actual time I'm here, it's just there's not enough waking hours in the day, and there's some things I want to accomplish in my business life and personal life and. Yeah, I want to know what that feels like. I don't know what that feels like.
Warm apple pie.
You're
going to
like sex. You'll like sex a lot. You know what? We're making light. Here's the hard, cold fact, folks. Tim's on today, tomorrow, and Thursday, and that's it. He's not part of the show anymore. I know for a fact that he's taking the high road here when he talks about pleasant conversations. The one with me was pleasant. I'm not so sure the others were. But the bottom line is this. He's not able to continue doing what he's doing based on what he's getting out of it in terms of, in financial terms from the station. And I get it. It's business. You can't do, certain things if the return is not there based on what you're putting into it. But the other hard truth is this. This show will go on. It's gone on with me for 35 years. People in, people out, people change, people come, people go, people don't work out, people do work out. But the truth is, there have been people in my life during my career who have left, and you kind of turn away and privately in your own head go, yes, thank goodness they're finally gone. I was going to get rid of them anyway. That is not the case with you. You, and I've told people this before, we acquired you by default. I had never met you. You didn't know a thing about me. You didn't know a thing about the show. Now, one of two things happen when somebody comes along, as you did, and steps into unknown territory in a show you don't know anything about. They either don't get it and never can get it and don't find a way to jump in and fit, or they do what you did, and that is you finally got it. It took, to me, 3 months, about 3 months, and then all of a sudden, it all kind of clicked, and I don't want to say made sense. It's still a lot of what we do doesn't make sense, but you got it. And I have appreciated having you here every day of the 15 months. I think you have become a solid part of this show. You, with your willingness to take a couple of criticisms in the beginning and realize what it was the audience didn't like or didn't get about you, and you made some minor changes, and it all went the direction it was supposed to go. And I will tell you that the emails that I get now about you are positive. You have been a terrific part of the show. The show will go on. The show will do. I'm not in this life to fail. And when I get to the point where something happens where it's just an absolute failure, I'm just going to do something else or bail out or whatever. That's not going to happen. But what is going to happen is there's going to be an obvious void because you filled a slot that wasn't even a slot. You know, I didn't have this position, the news guy, the guy who contributed to the Burke segments, and you did it well, and you adapted well, and I'm glad you did, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope that whatever it is you decide to concentrate on and put more time into is a screaming success. I do.
Well, thank you. I've always been a guy that's had a vision and made things happen. You know, I wanted to be a hockey announcer. I made that happen. I wanted to be a publisher.
You wanted to be a night cook at Denny's. Yeah, look what happened.
I made that happen. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a beer vendor.
You wanted a knife salesman door to door. You boom, did it.
Made it happen.
See?
And so
I don't think, though, you ever in your life said, man, I'd love to be part of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon, because you didn't even know what it was.
Well, no, but
and it still worked.
But you're right, though, in terms of adapting. You know, after 3 months, I mean, but that's like any relationship you have, personal or professional. It takes a while to feel somebody out before you kind of get into that comfort zone, whether it's a radio show or a personal relationship or anything in between. And you're right, and I appreciate your kind words, and I really have thoroughly enjoyed working here and working with all the people here, not just on this show, but everybody at this station. I told John Hadley today, I've worked here for, you know, almost 16 months, and I haven't had a single argument with one person here in 16 months. Who can say that in the radio business these days? I mean, you know, usually somebody snaps, or you don't get along with somebody, or there's somebody gets their feelings hurt, or somebody takes something the wrong way. I mean, I've had disagreements, but I've never had an actual, like, argument where it was I never came here one time thinking, oh, what a miserable work environment this is, either in the studio or outside the studio. Everybody here is great. It's just that there are some restraints that are in place with regard to how you can monetize what you do here. And there's only so many hours in the day. And I have a PI business to run, which is my primary business, you know, backbone, where I make my house payment with that, my car payment with that, all my bills with that. And this was more of a secondary job as well. And there are other things I want to pursue. And if this secondary job took up like an hour or two of my day, it'd be one thing, but it takes up five. And that's a lion's share of the day. And after 16 months, I just decided finally, you know, it's a symbolic thing with me, kind of a sentimental thing. I turned 50 in July, and people get sentimental when they turn a decade, you know. And there's things I want to accomplish before I'm gone. So I'm going to pursue those.
Tell me if I'm right when I say this. If the money had been here, if this business was what it was years ago, and there was a way to turn what you're doing here into something more profitable, where there's more income, I'd like to think in a heartbeat you'd have stayed here.
Maybe. I would have considered it. You know, I had some really, really good years financially in radio. Don't get me wrong. You know, of course, this is before the internet boom in the early 2000s. I mean, I was doing really, really well for myself as a radio talk show host and as a sales director and a sports director of a big five station cluster, and did really well. But the lion's share of the advertising dollar out there doesn't just get split newspaper, TV, and print and billboard anymore. Now there's internet, and there's, you know, there's all these other options that people have, and everybody's fighting for a hard dollar, and everybody who sells advertising in this market knows it, you know. And anybody who owns a business in this town probably has been contacted by at least 50 different advertising opportunities in the last 6 months.
Right.
You know, if not
and
more.
That's what I've always said has not killed, but has certainly sucked a lot of the life out of the newspaper business, the TV business, the radio business, the billboard business, is this social media, this focus on put all your money on the internet and social media, and it's taken a toll. It hasn't killed certainly talk radio, and if any radio survives, to me it'll be talk radio, whether it's sports talk or politics or this whatever this is. We do this juvenile nonsense. That's the format that will last the longest. It will outlast music, simply because you can get your music from Spotify, Pandora, just dump it into your phone and your iPod. You're right. That's why I'm saying, if things were different, if the structure of the advertising world were different, I think you love this business, and I think you love being in it, and I think if the money were there, you'd stay in it. I do.
Well, thank you for this opportunity, and thanks for letting me be a part of this show. And I've told you that off the air, and I'll tell you it on the air. I mean, it's been great working with all you guys, and I look forward to making fun of Bill Clevin as much as I possibly can in the next 72 hours of my life.
By the way, you have our number. You can call in any time and make fun of Bill or me or anybody you want to. Just pick up the phone and do it. We welcome it, and you will. Tim will be with us today, tomorrow, and Thursday. So my advice to you, Tim, is don't screw up. At least you got two more days. Try not to mess anything up big time, so that you go out, you know, with a clean slate and a clean record. In the event that somebody is listening, thinking, "Hey, that guy's going to be available. Let's pick him up."
I hope the clock doesn't screw up.
Well, that's something I was thinking about too. What if the digital clock it goes down or is off? Who's going to reset it?
I know.
Nobody knows how to do it. You know what? We may have to call you in on an as needed basis and go, "Hey, man, how much do you want to come in here and reset the digital clock?" You know, give that some thought. Is how much you want to do?
$5,000.
Okay, that's what I thought you'd say. No, it's not good news. It's not the end of the world, but you just need to know that I'm not about to just kind of blow it off and go, well, good luck. It's, you fit in here in your own way, not like anybody else who's ever been part of the show. And there have been people who tried to be part and it didn't work. It just didn't work. And it usually doesn't work because they just don't have a lot to say. And you guys know what I'm talking about. We'll have somebody on the phone and they sound tremendous. Come on in here. And they get in here and they freeze. They don't have anything to say. Even after a day or two or three or a month, they just don't know how to contribute. They don't know what to say it, when to interrupt, when not to interrupt. It's just sort of something you can't teach people to know how to do or to be comfortable with.
Well, and this show isn't your normal show. I mean,
you got that right.
I'm a college-educated 49-year-old man, and it took me 2 months to even understand who was real and who was imaginary in Frank Opinion's head. Like I didn't know who was alive, who was dead, and who was imaginary. I mean, it took me.
Well, what he means by that is, you know, Bernice and Cheese and Reggie
Cheese.
And sounds and somebody. All right, what the heck right. Are these real? Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right, I didn't know if he was dead or alive.
He's dead. He died. He died about 8 years ago. We are, through the magic of computers, were able to take old things that he said and piece them together and make it sound current. We make him say what we want him to say. No, he's long gone. He's gone. So have fun the last 3 days, and thank you for your contribution to the show.
Absolutely, my pleasure. It's been my pleasure.
And as the Burke segment continues, does anybody else or does Tim have anything else to say? No, nothing?
Nope.
Slackers?
Yeah.
Slackers.
I'm good.
I don't, because I'm bummed about Tim.
I'm pretty depressed right now.
Yeah.
What a couple of slackers. Close the Burke segment, losers. Close it. All right. Now, as I said earlier, Dan Buffett comes in today. We'll talk a little bit about this Project Blue Book. I'm going to throw a question out there for you. Where do you think you could go to see the most elephants in captivity anywhere?
Anywhere in the world at all?
Yeah, where do you think that would be? I don't know about the world, but certainly the United States, and actually I think the world.
Oh, all right then. I'm going to say Thailand.
Oh.
Anybody else?
Wow.
Now, in captivity.
Yeah,
not
in
running
captivity.
I'll say Stevens College up in Columbia.
Wrong. See, this is what we'll be missing. That kind of stupid, ridiculous answer. No, it's St. Louis, the St. Louis Zoo.
I'll say the St. Louis Zoo.
Well, Dan, you're right. It's the St. Louis Zoo. And the reason that that came up was I was watching some sort of, National Geographic, I don't know what it was, some nature thing, and they showed these elephants, and then they made reference to the St. Louis, and they said, you know, the most successful and largest collection of elephants in captivity is in St. Louis, Missouri, at the St. Louis Zoo.
Wow.
And I've said before, they used to make a big deal out of the San Diego Zoo. You know, Johnny Carson used to always have that chick on from. I went to the San Diego Zoo. It's a joke. First of all, you have to pay to get in.
What?
And it's nothing. Oh, yeah. And it is nothing. It's not even close.
I think
the St. Louis Zoo is a 10. The San Diego Zoo is a 6.
Did you follow the story about what happened to the elephants at Grant's Farm last month?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
How did they die?
Is that unbelievable?
I think one died of natural causes. The other one died out of sadness.
Oh, wow.
Or I don't know why they died, but they all four died right back to back to back to back.
Wow.
And now they're like within a month or something, and there was only four of them, and three of them are dead. I mean,
they're all dead.
It's something. Oh, they're all dead.
Yeah, they're not having elephants anymore as a result of it because.
Well, maybe that's a good idea. Because obviously they don't like living there. Grant's Farm.
Well, you know how they say a lot of times elderly people die of broken hearts.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
When a spouse dies, somebody else dies. They actually theorized that that might have happened with those elephants at Grant's Farm. That they died of broken hearts.
Wow. Listen, elephants have been, it's a fact. Elephants have extremely deep emotions. And look at the elephant graveyard thing. When elephants in the wild, when they get ready to die and they know they're going to die, they make this long trip to the elephant graveyard to die. I mean, they know, well, time to go to the elephant graveyard.
I know, they're sensitive. I dated one time. You couldn't even look at her cross-eyed without crying.
Packer trunk.
I think to date an elephant, you have to be an elephant. You were probably pretty big when you dated the elephant.
She listens to the show. She's AM and the ZOO.
Oh, my.
Bad, I know.
Did you show her your trunk?
Now, before you get away, before you leave us, and Thursday will be your last day, when you came on board, we told some people some things, and you allowed us to talk about some things that, that I thought were really fascinating. And the big one was, you've had four DWIs,
right,
and that you blow into the breathalyzer thing to start your car. And what I didn't know till you told me, because I thought, well, you'd have somebody else blow in it and hit the road. You say you have to re-hit it like every half hour, or it'll shut down. That's to keep you from having somebody else get you started. You have to keep telling it, hey, I'm not. And you have to do that for, what is it, like 9 more years?
8 more. It was a 10-year sentence that I was given.
Okay, which brings me to this question, and you, each one of you can tell me what you think. There are a couple of states that already have in place a law that if you've had even one DWI, you have to have a breathalyzer ignition interlock device just because you've had the DWI. Now most states that's not the case. One DWI, you don't have to do that. Here's my question. I got a big thing about drunk drivers killing people. You know, when people go out of their minds because a shooter goes in and shoots four people every day in this country, and this has been the average for the last several years, 30 people are killed by drunk drivers. That's 210 people a week. The Las Vegas guy, the nut in the Mandalay Bay Hotel or whatever it was, who took out 50-something people, that happens in 2 days, every 2 days in this country by drunk drivers. They kill people. So here's my question. Would it be such a bad idea to put that in every car? Let's say I have no DWIs, I'm not a drinker, but let's just say that, well, okay, that's the law now. Every car has a thing where when you get in it and you get ready to drive, maybe not every half hour, but to just get started and go, you have to hit it. Would that be a horrible idea? I don't think most people would like it, but I don't think I'd object to it. Why would I?
Do you know
it takes 5 seconds.
When I was in court-mandated counseling for my issue, one of the counselors handed out a sheet one time, and it showed what the penalty is for DUI in countries around the world. And if I'm not mistaken, it was Egypt. And this was like back when I had my problems in like 2014 or 15. And they handed out the sheet, and they showed how many DUI arrests there are in each country and what the penalty is for a first-time user. And, of course, the United States had, you know, dozens of thousands of DUI arrests in 1 year. That year that she handed that sheet out, the entire country of Egypt had 2 DUIs the entire year. And it's because the minimum penalty for it was 2 years in prison.
Whoa.
Wow.
That's what they call a deterrent where I come from. And you know, you talk about interlock ignition devices deterring people. Well, sure, because it's impossible to start the car. But the fear of incarceration, it worked there. And it's sort of cruel and unusual punishment, which this country doesn't allow. 2 years for having, you know, for making one little bad mistake where no one got hurt. But it that's what works for them.
In Canada, your first offense is a felony.
Wow.
Your first DWI.
In China, if they pull you over and you're drunk, you go right to prison. I mean, there's no trial. You're going to prison. Guess where there aren't a lot of drunk drivers? China. And the only reason I know this is a guy that I don't know well, but and I haven't seen him for a couple of years. He's a global business person, so he has to travel. And he goes to China 2 or 3 times a year. And he said the first time he went over there, he's at dinner with these Chinese businessmen, and he had a couple of drinks. And one of them looked at him and said, you do have a driver. And he said, no. He said, I got a rental car. And he goes, well, you don't get in it. He said, no one at this table, none of us, are driving ourselves home. And we're going to get drunk. And he said, and they do. Boy, they're Chinese businessmen. They get falling down drunk. He said, but we don't drive home. Because if you get pulled over, you're going to prison. And he said, he called like a cab. He didn't even drive his rental car. It scared him to death.
You should Google sometime on YouTube, or I guess you should just YouTube search Chinese baby rescue, Chinese baby building rescue. I believe that's what it is. And it's the video of a guy who was in China, and he was on about the 20th floor of his building, and he was suicidal, and he had a young child in his hands, and he was threatening to throw the child to its death. And so, and there was a rescue commander that was, like, you know, tethered up there, and he was, like, lifted up, and he was craned up there, or however he elevated up there. And he's trying to negotiate with the guy, but you can see the guy has a gun behind his back the entire time. The guy, the rescuer, right? And this guy's sitting on a windowsill, and he's kind of talking to him. He's kind of talking to him. He's just kind of reaching out and, you know, just kind of putting his hand up. Now, hey, man, stay calm, stay calm, stay calm. He whips that gun up.
Shoots the guy, grabs the baby.
Shot the guy dead right in the head and grabbed the baby.
Wow.
That's how they rescue you in China.
Oh.
There you go. You know, sometimes other countries have the right idea. They get the wrong idea about a lot of other things, but they have the right idea about certain. You know, like in I think it's Turkey. If you steal something, they cut your hands off.
Whoa.
I wouldn't steal a gumdrop. I wouldn't steal anything. Holy mackerel. You don't think that sends a message? Yeah. Next, who wants to steal something? We will cut your hands off. Oh. I think they do it in public. They make, you know, here, everybody, gather around. We'll cut this guy's hands off.
And sex offenders, they duct tape their hands around a tree, and they whip them to death. Can you imagine how many whips it would take to whip you to death just by getting whipped on the back?
Oh.
They whip them to death.
Yeah. A lot of people will think this is terrible. I'm all for it. I'm all for baby rapists. No. If you rape a child, strap them to the tree and whip them till they die. I have no problem with that. We're just too easy. The reason we have so many drunk drivers and the reason 30 people get killed a day is look at you. You're a four-time DWI guy. You're not in jail. Now you're paying the price, and you're lucky you didn't kill anybody. Look at Leonard Little. He killed a woman and then trash-talked her, and he didn't do a day in jail. We have a weird way, and it's all about money. It's all about the revenue generated by alcohol and how many businesses are supported by the sales of alcohol. It's all about money. Yet we lose our minds if somebody shoots somebody. Now, that's terrible. That's one person, two person, 50 people. It's not 30 a day every day. We've got a major alcohol problem in this country, and we make it seem so appealing and so much like the thing to do that if you don't do it, you look like a weirdo. Go look at any of the TV shows. Guy comes in, throws down his keys. What does he do? Walks over and pours himself a drink. Every event, it's all about drinking. Can I get you something to drink? Cocktail parties, wedding receptions, just drinks, drinks, more drinks, and alcohol. I'm amazed it's only 30 people a day. I'm surprised it's not 300 people a day that get killed by drunk drivers. Alcohol is everywhere. And I think alcohol is a far bigger problem than marijuana is or will be. It's a bigger problem than guns. Alcohol kills a lot of people, not just the drunk drivers, but the people who die from alcohol poisoning, from drinking themselves to death, from having to go into rehab and ruining their lives and losing their families. Holy mackerel. But there's no turning back. We're never going to go back to prohibition. We're never even going to be able to sort of curb it, because nobody wants to. The powerful people don't want to. It's too much a part of the economy now. And speaking of that, for every good piece of news there is about the economy or about the world or the government, it creates bad news. For every positive, there's a negative. I'll give you an example. I just talked to somebody this morning who's a business owner, and he says, you know, this unemployment rate being the lowest it's been in decades, he said, it's killing us. We can't find employees. Think about it. The labor pool is just down to the people that are left. So few of them, and you don't even want to hire them. And he says, and then we do hire somebody, and because there are so many jobs available and so many people unemployed, you train the person, you spend money on the person, you pay the person, and guess what happens? Somebody else hires them away because they can't find anybody, so they steal your guy. So it's created this problem for businesses. You know, when Walmart came along, and everybody goes, oh, Walmart's putting all the little stores out of business. Well, the good news is, ooh, they're building a Walmart, and 400 people will be hired. But the bad news is, eight little shops went out of business that have been around forever. Walmart destroyed my parents financially. It absolutely destroyed them. They had a little store in Tennessee, which they had no business owning. They didn't know anything about owning a store, but a relative talked my dad, when he was out of work, into opening a little store. Huge mistake. And then they opened it in about a year. Here comes Walmart right down the road, selling exactly what they sold, only cheaper, and it put them out of business. And I remember I used to beg my parents, shut the doors, close this place up. They had $40,000 to their names, and that's because they sold their house in O'Fallon, Illinois. So that money from the house, 40 grand, they kept pumping into that store. Business was down. They need 8,000. They need 3,000. They need 5,000. Every month, and I said, you were going to go through all your, Walmart's not going away. It's not going away. Close the door. They didn't do it. And they went through all the money and had nothing. So good news also means bad news sometimes. I don't even know how we got on that. See, that's the problem with this show, with trying to describe it. So what's the show about? Well, today it was about Tim Woodburn leaving, and then Walmart came along and they talked about people not being able to hire people. What? How does that fit in? We got a couple of calls. If you would like to join in here until we get to the news at 4 and then Dan Buffa, feel free. I think you know how this works. We don't care what you want to talk about as long as it's not obscene or vulgar or political, or you ask me questions about things I don't know anything about, which is most things. Here are the numbers, 314-821-0590. That's 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Chris is with us. Chris, welcome to 590 The Fan. What can we do for you?
How are you doing, Frank? This is a true pleasure to speak to all of you guys. I am in the fan.
Thank you.
So I have to say, Frank, you hit a nerve with me about the alcohol thing. I'm in complete agreement with you. I wish it would all just go away. I lost an uncle to it. My father was an alcoholic. My grandfather passed away from it. It is just consumed everybody in this country, and I truly wish it would just go away. I know it won't ever, but it surely will. I'm with you on that.
They glamorize it. Look at the holiday, especially the holidays. Oh. Every commercial they show for families getting into the holidays, they're drinking. I mean, they make it look like if the thing to do, and if you don't do it, you're a weirdo.
Yep, I'm with you 100%. I don't, when I go out, and people are always like, hey, drink. No, don't do it. So I wish everybody were more like us, and I'm aiming at being, and thanks for starting my call.
All right, Chris, appreciate it. Chris was a little garbled there, but hey, we don't care. He's AM and the PM. Oh my goodness, charter listener from almost day one, been with us forever and ever and ever, the one and only Marv. Marv, welcome once again to 590 The Fan. How are you?
Thank you, Frank. Oh, I'm just doing fine, getting older by the day. I just wanted to pass along, I discovered by accident over the weekend that HBO 2 is streaming The Sopranos. They started back from day one on Sunday, and it's just been going back to back for like 11 or 12 hours a day. It's on right now, so it'll be on the rest of today, and then tomorrow, and Thursday, and then finally winds up Thursday night.
Wow. But I watched it all morning.
Nice. Oh, there you go. Yeah. Isn't it great to see those episodes again?
Yeah.
Well, it's also on TV, like cable television. You can watch The Sopranos. Now, you can't watch every episode back to back continuously, like you're talking about, I think. But it's on regular schedule. Where? I don't know, but I saw it yesterday. I'm just kind of going through the guide, and I saw Sopranos. And then after it was another Sopranos episode. Now, I didn't go down and look down the line to see if it's on every hour, but it's on television,
HBO
too.
HBO 2. That's what you're looking at, is HBO 2. Just started Sunday.
Well, when you said streaming, I thought you meant you could only see it on the computer. But, yeah, it probably was.
That's why I said HBO 2, because, I mean, I'm not a computer person. And so, you know, just anybody that's got HBO, you know, it should have HBO 2 along with it. So I wanted to point that out to all of you. It is so, what a great show. What an incredible show that was. And
sometimes you don't realize how good a show is until it's rerunning. For me, it was Seinfeld. I didn't watch Seinfeld. And now when I see it's on, I can't not watch it. It's right, it's great. Exactly. And I didn't get it at first.
Yeah. Hey, I want to say, when you talk about the drunk driving, obviously drunk driving is horrible and all the rest of it, but certain laws, I think, are just a little ridiculous. This thing about an open container,
yeah.
I never did understand it. Now, the only person they should be worried about is the driver, whether he's drinking or not.
Okay, let me back you up a minute. What is the open container law? Because I'm not sure I know.
Well, if you get pulled over and somebody, or it doesn't even have to be somebody in the car, if there's an open container of alcohol, could be a bottle of beer, could be whatever, if it's in your car, and whether it's you in your possession or somebody in the back seat, you can get a ticket. Now, Tim, you probably know about this, but it's just called, and all states have it, an open container law. So you're not allowed to carry an open bottle containing alcohol in your car. And I just never could understand it.
What is it you don't understand?
Why? What's the point? You're only concerned about the driver. You can have a bunch of drunks in your car. So what does that have to do with how you drive your car?
Okay, I understand it, but I also understand that if there is a bottle or and it's open and it's half full or it's empty, I think you've got a better chance of maybe not having a drunk driver if that container is not in the car.
The point is...
Meaning the guy wasn't drinking while he was driving. I know he could have had a bunch of drinks and gotten in the car. I get that.
If the driver's sober, what difference does it make what other people are doing in your car? Or what difference... it's just frustrating.
I understand.
Utah is the state that dropped their blood alcohol level to 0.05. So they're getting really strict out there. But
what is that, Tim, like one drink?
I wanted to tell you, I'm going to miss you, buddy. You really did, you got your own way. And your presence will be missed. I'll just put it that way. Are you still going to...
Well, it sounds like he's dying,
Tim.
Are you you still going to be in the PI business, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I've got a woman I want you to look up for me. I'll call you later on. And,
all right. My favorite kind of job.
Anyway, God bless you all. And persevere. Talk to you later.
Thank you, Marv.
Thank you, Marv.
Yeah, there's a great line about a guy who tells his buddy, he goes, "Hey, I haven't seen you since school. What did you end up doing?" He goes, "I'm a gynecologist." He goes, "Really? Can I ask why?" He goes, "Yeah, it's a great way to look up old girlfriend."
Oh.
Thank you.
Hey,
thank you.
In Canada, you cannot walk down the street with an open container. They have some of the toughest laws.
Now, that doesn't make sense because you're not driving. You're outside walking.
You cannot walk down the street.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Wow. We're going to talk to Steve, then we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk to whoever else wants to speak with us. 314-821-0590. That was too fast. Let's do it again. 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Steve, welcome to 590 The Fan. What can we do for you?
Good afternoon. You were talking about punishments on crimes. There's one thing that's always baffled me. How isn't a drive-by shooting a first-degree murder offense? Aren't they loading a weapon and going to, even though they're not shooting, maybe that they're the person they're shooting at, somebody at that party is a rival gang or whatever, but they intentionally loaded a gun, drove to a place, and shot into a crowd and maybe killed a person that wasn't, their intended victim, but they went to go kill somebody and they killed somebody. I never understood that.
No, I will never, ever, I'm with you. I don't get why some things are second degree and not first, why some are considered premeditated. I sort of get premeditated. You've been thinking about this for a while. But here's the one, Steve, I really don't get, is why somebody is charged with attempted murder and the punishment is so much less than murder. The only difference is he was a bad shot, okay? He missed. His intentions were exactly the same as if he had killed the person. So the fact that it was attempted murder and, he didn't kill him, he missed, so let's go easy on him. No, I think it should be the same exact punishment if he had hit the target, because everything was the same in his head. His intentions were the same. He is a murderer, and just because he botched it doesn't change anything. That I don't get. But no, I'm with you.
Yeah.
It goes
I'm
to
with
intent.
You on that also.
It goes to intent. First degree murder is when you intend to take somebody's life. Second degree murder is when you act in a way that somebody's life was taken without intent of specifically targeting that person.
Okay, but when it's attempted murder and the punishment is less, the intent is exactly the same. You intended to kill that guy. You just missed.
And then even though you shot at somebody else in a crowd, and you killed somebody else, your intent was to go kill somebody, and you killed somebody. It might not have been that person, but how is that any lesser than first-degree murder? Your intent was to load a gun, drive over to a place, and shoot somebody. You're a poor shot. You killed somebody else.
The story that's in the news right now, the 7-year-old girl in Texas who was in the car and got shot, guy pulled up alongside of him, and now they've confirmed, because he admitted it was a black guy, two black guys in the car, one was the shooter. But initially, oh my goodness, hate, race, white people. Right. No, that wasn't the way. But here's what I don't get. When every time they do this story in the news and they say it like this, they go, well, now we find out that it wasn't a hate crime. And they almost say it like, it was just mistaken identity. What? He still cares. Almost like, well, it's not as bad as we thought it was. Yes, it is. She's dead.
And another thing I don't understand, when, like, Michael Brown, why didn't they bring up his priors? Why isn't that part, they say that's not relevant in the case. Well, if you're a habitual alcoholic and you get pulled over and you get a DWI, don't they look at your prior records and it's like your 15th one? Isn't that public information? Why is
You know what else they said wasn't, you know, priors? Remember what else they said wasn't relevant? At least the defense attorney said wasn't relevant. It wasn't relevant that O.J. Simpson beat the hell out of his wife numerous times till she was almost unrecognizable. Well, that wasn't relevant. That has nothing to do with this night. Yes, it does, because it tells you who he was and his feelings toward her. I think it's extremely relevant.
Correct. I don't understand that either. That's the most stupidest thing I've ever heard.
All right, well, we've just straightened out the legal system, Steve.
Yep,
I appreciate you helping me do that.
Now,
that'll never happen. That's never going to happen, world peace. But maybe we can fix this local stuff. Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
All right. I can do some business here. The business, this is easy for me because I'm a customer a few times over of Johnny Lundoff. I was going to sit here and try to run down the vehicles I've bought. A couple of trucks, I think Suburban, Trailblazer, Tahoe, Corvette. I'm missing one. I bought a couple of pre-owned vehicles there, so I kind of know my way around the place as a customer. And I also know a thing or two about it from the other side and how the place is run. Listen. In the same way that I tell all of you who hate going to the dentist that you don't have to hate it and you don't have to dread it, I could say the same thing about Johnny Lundoff Chevrolet. It is not at all uncommon to meet people, and if the subject of buying a car comes up, they say, oh my goodness, there's nothing I dread more than buying a car. I can't stand that experience. I can't stand going in and you get hustled and hit on by a salesperson who jumps and catches you at the door and they try to steer you over to something you don't want to buy. None of that describes Johnny Lundoff Chevrolet. So again, I will say to you, if you don't like buying a car, you couldn't possibly have ever bought a vehicle from Johnny Lundoff Chevrolet. Sometimes there's an easy fix for things. And this is an easy fix for your hate to buy a car problem. And the fix is this. Don't buy them from those places that made you feel that way. Go shop at Johnny Lundoff Chevrolet. I didn't say buy it there. I said shop there. I said give them a chance. In fact, I would love it if everybody would go to 5 different dealerships, because the more other dealers you go to, the more you'll appreciate the way they treat people at Johnny Lundoff Chevrolet. And I've never been a fan of this price and product and inventory and so much per month and so much down. I don't think that's what causes somebody to buy a car one place over another place. I think it comes down to what matters most in so many businesses, and that's how you are treated. Of course you don't want to overpay. Of course you don't want to find out that for your Silverado truck, you paid $1,000 more than your buddy paid for the exact same truck. It's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. They couldn't stay in business if they weren't competitive. So forget the whole price thing. That's a given. They're extremely competitive. So let's get to what really is the reason people choose one dealership over another. And it's the way they're treated. You go, well, it's too far from me. Well, it's not too far from all the people who've driven 100, 200 miles to buy a vehicle from Johnny Landoff. And they did that and passed up all the other dealers because they liked the way they were treated. You'll see. Johnny Landoff Chevrolet. The Washington Elizabeth exit off Interstate 270, North County, where they've been since 1960. And, of course, 24/7 at Landoff.com.
Let's get a check on traffic right now with Tory Lyons.
Traffic sponsored by Pizza Hut. Had an earlier accident eastbound 270 at New Florissant. They're wrapping up a serious crash on Highway 94 east of Francis Howell High School. And look for brake lights on westbound 44 past Hampton. Right now at Pizza Hut, get 50% off all menu-priced pizzas when you order online. That's 50% off your favorites like hand-tossed pepperoni, meat lovers, or even original pan supreme. But hurry, this deal ends soon. No one out pizzas the Hut. I'm Tory Lyons reporting for 590 The Fan. Now back to the large morning show in the afternoon.
Maryville University offers more than 90 innovative, market-relevant degree programs. Maryville invests in state-of-the-art technology to empower its students to learn in an engaging, collaborative environment. Through its Digital World program, students receive free iPads loaded with digital textbooks and more than 150 apps. With a dedicated life coach assigned to each student and a 97% career placement rate, Maryville provides a great return on investment. Check out maryville.edu for more information.
Hi, this is Tim Woodburn. I'm celebrating 10 years of being a private investigator in St. Louis with a new book, Bad Mood, Good Mood, Crazy Marriage Stories, Male and Female Stalkers, Politicians and Their Kids, Hilarious Family Brawls, Cops Running Fake Lie Detector Tests, all kinds of shenanigans. Want to turn your bad mood into a good mood? Check out the hardback, the e-version, or the Amazon Kindle version, or even the audiobook version. It's all available on Amazon or at badmoodgoodmood.com.
Good choice.
Thank you.
And if you like television, you like movies, and I think everybody does, some more than others, some watch a few hours a week, and some can't get enough of it. I like a great, I don't want to waste my time, but I do like a really good TV show and a good movie, and Dan Buffa will be here in the 4 o'clock hour to tell us probably quite a bit, because he's got to catch up on 3 weeks' worth of not having been around to steer us in the right direction or keep us away from things he knows would be a waste of time. So he'll be in here after the news at 4 o'clock. As long as we're mentioning going to the dentist, let's just talk about going to the dentist before we take our break. I don't remember how old a child is when you first take him to the dentist. I want to say... two? Do you take a kid to the dentist who's one? When do they even have teeth?
Yeah, I think around two.
Yeah.
Two or three.
Yeah, two or three.
Yeah.
I think it's about two years old, and certainly I don't remember going to the dentist as two. My first memory of going to the dentist was in Tennessee, in a little hillbilly sticks hick town we lived in, and Dr. Jerry was an alcoholic, and he reeked of martini breath. He loved his martinis. In fact, I remember as a child, if my memory is clear, he actually would have a drink right there in the dentist's office, you know, while he's working on it. And I could smell it. I didn't know what it was as a kid because we didn't drink in my house. And then, of course, years later, I realized it was gin or vodka or whatever. Is there a gin martini? Is it usually?
I believe there is, yeah.
But he was bad, bad, bad drunk. And my parents had to have some work redone, ripped out and redone years later because they realized that Dr. Jerry had done it while he was so drunk he didn't even know what he was doing, so he screwed their teeth up. There are a lot of bad dental stories out there, a lot of horror stories, a lot of stories of pain. They don't come from Ballast Dental Care. They come from other places, not all other places. I'm not the guy that tells you there's only one good dental clinic in the country. That's insane. I'm sure there are others. But if you're AM and the PM, why would you go to any of those? You wouldn't. You're going to go to Ballast Dental Care. You're going to do it today or tomorrow or the next day, but you'll eventually go. You will. Because you're going to want to see if what I say is true. You're going to want to try to prove me wrong if you can, and you won't succeed. because everything I've told you about that Ballast Dental Care is true. You will never dread going to the dentist again. You will feel in 5 minutes like you've been a patient there for a long, long time. Folks, do not me. Do yourself a favor. Make the first appointment. Just get in there and get this process underway that needs to be taken care of with your mouth and gums. Ballast Dental Care, the corner of Ballast and Clayton Roads, ballastdentalcare.com. Don't go away because you only have today, tomorrow, and Thursday to hear the voice of Tim Woodburn deliver the news. And he won't be with us after that. And right after the 4 o'clock news will be Dan Buffa. It is 4 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is Doug Vaughn. You are listening to 590 The Fan, KFNS Wood River, St. Louis, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio. I'm Tom Roberts. President Trump will address the nation from the Oval Office about border security tonight. Vice President Mike Pence offered some details to NBC.